Yellow.
Orange.
Blue.
All right, welcome to the show. Hi, everybody.
Hello.
We're back.
We are. Feeling hot.
Well, we just did a lot of work. We did. Oh,
you know why? Kids are screwing around with these levels.
Oh. That's what kids do. They like little switches and stuff and buttons and...
Yes. I could dominate the show. I could turn Greg way down. Next, in the post-show when we have an argument, I'll just happen to slowly...
See, at some point, we are going to switch sides. I'm going to have control, at least for one episode.
Come on, I never mess with the board.
I know, but I feel like it might give a different perspective, you know, on the beers if we were just looking in different places. Who knows?
It's a good idea. Want to do it tonight?
Sure.
Let's do it now.
Oh, then I have to switch the computer over to the computer.
No, you don't. We'll just switch roles completely.
Okay.
I can be contrarian blowhard.
And you can be scared to argue without all the facts.
No, that probably won't change. I mean, our personalities won't change, right? But
It depends what the...
The perspectives
depends
will.
What the goal is, right? Because if we're trying to...
Well, check this out. Now I'm coming at you from the right side, or the left side, instead of the right side.
I could screw people up.
I know, it's crazy.
Are you going to be able to deal with the mic all the way up there?
I think so. I think I can.
That'll be part of the game.
I do need a writing implement. I can use this one.
Okay. That'll be part of the game is... you know what? I'm going to be way hot over here because I naturally sit a lot closer to the
all
mic.
All right, so I'll just, yeah.
Yeah, so you're going to have to tune me down there. All right. And here's dinosaurs on your computer.
The biggest dinosaur ever has been found. The largest terrestrial animal
ever. I love the name.
Yeah, Dreadnoughtus.
That's awesome.
Heavier than a Boeing 757.
That's pretty cool.
Now, one thing that I would say about that is, you know, planes have to be light to fly. Mm-hmm. So it's not... You know, it's not like a solid piece of metal.
Still light, weighs 50 tons.
Yes, yes.
Weighs 70.
Right.
Well, so we have, you know...
Oh, that is true.
We have Diplodocus, which most everyone's heard of. We have Brachiosaurus, 40
right, which
tons.
Is what most people... What used to be called Brontosaurus.
And then... So this one's one I hadn't really heard of. It's a...
I'm sure you're pronouncing that exactly correctly.
Yeah, yeah. How do you pronounce GNKO? FUTALOGNKO Saurus.
Let's start.
FUT.
FUT.
ALOG.
ALOG.
NKO Saurus.
Futalognosaurus?
Logno. Okay. Cool. I wonder where that's from.
Probably from the Futalogna region or some place, right? I mean,
it looks almost Japanese, but I don't think there's too many dinosaurs found in Japan. I think the ground's pretty churned up, right? All the volcanoes and everything.
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, it's probably not great for prospecting there, be my guess.
But yeah, this is weird. I feel less intelligent on this side. Just kidding. Just kidding. Okay. I did lose my concentration there for a minute. So that was weird. Common Core. Let's talk about your kids because we talked about your kids messing with this. So Common Core. We had a little bit of a discussion on Twitter about Common Core.
Yeah. So I had paper sitting on the table. I just noticed it. It was her math stuff, and I didn't even notice down the bottom. It's like Common Core. Something, right? I just saw what they were teaching, you know, and they were talking about numbers greater than 5 and less than 10.
It looked like the thing you posted was directed at parents to explain what they're teaching.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were working on numbers between 6 and 10 and factoring them out, right? Like figuring out the difference between 5 and that, right? So they have the group of 5 and then the difference. And like, I thought it was funny, ironic, I don't know what the word is, but you know, on the side in the bigger caption, right, the little pullout, it's like teacher says, what is 7? And class goes 5 and 2.
Right.
But it's almost a goofy Jeopardy type question, right? Like, what is seven? Seven's a lot of things.
Seven right, is... but they're trying to teach something basic. They're trying right. to teach this essentially what and what I covered in the tweet is it's a subitizing method. It's getting people down to the level which they can actually count by visualization instead of just actually I'm sorry not count. They can just see by visualization, which is typically right. four.
We should have some beer.
Oh, good idea.
See, that's your job. It's your job.
Oh, I got to pour it now. That's right. So they're trying to get it, you know. So people basically, anything that's above four to almost everybody is just a lot. It's not a number. It's just a lot. And we've invented along the way, and actually several cultures have invented various different ways of counting mm-hmm. to add to our method for being able to see these various different...
Oh, I thought I turned on caffeine. Let me log in.
See, all the problems that happen when we go... So, anyway, we invented all these different methods of counting. Some of them using different bases, you know, and whatever. But we have invented them, and they are the way in which we now express ourselves in numbers. The problem is the old way of teaching really was not using very much in the way of... what's the word I'm looking at? It wasn't using a lot of cognitive neuroscience to explain how we do what we do, or why we do what we do.
Right.
So this is taking a neuroscience-based way of teaching, hoping that kids will understand numbers better from the beginning, and then be able to use math
right.
in an easier method. Because essentially that's what we do. We do estimation when we get to larger scale numbers.
Right. No, I agree with that part. I mean, I see the exercises. It's getting kids more familiar with number line
mm-hmm.
and relationships between numbers.
Yeah. Right?
And
it's less about rote memorization.
When I was trying to show you that, you know, that the Facebook graphic, you know, the prototypical anti-Common Core Facebook graphic right. where it shows an easy subtraction. And it's like five steps instead of one. You know, and you know, do it the old way, it's like two easy steps. And do it the new way, it's like five goofy steps because you find a chunk of 10, then you find another chunk of 10, and then you find a chunk of 5, and then you take the difference, you know. Right. So,
but one thing that the guy who wrote the post on Reddit that was, you know, very well praised and he did a great job in it, that he pointed out was that when you're teaching kids, when you initially teach kids the numbers, and I'm sure you had this experience, it's hard for them that, you know, they don't mm-hmm. get that these numbers are associated with these names that we put them mm-hmm. and teaching them to memorize 1 through 10, you're just teaching them to memorize a bunch of different 10 different words.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to then establish a relationship between words and counting, which is actually rather difficult because kids can really, and people can only really initially immediately count to 4.
Mm-hmm.
So you're then adding another step onto the whole process by making them memorize these weird names. Now, there's really kind of no way around that. They have to get the names of the numbers eventually. But you see that it's hard for kids to do it. It's not just natural. It's not nearly as natural as language is.
Maybe my kids are too old. Maybe I don't remember. But, I mean, it seems like counting really wasn't that difficult of a thing to bring on, you know.
Counting isn't, but remembering the names of the different numbers.
Oh, okay. And I mean, another thing is they're kind of learned together, right? Because you're not just learning 1 through 10 as a completely abstract concept.
True.
You're learning them as you're counting. You start off with 1, 2, 3, true. And go from there. Yeah. So it definitely builds upon being able to count 4. Naturally, mm-hmm. be able to just intuit 4 and then go from there.
I mean, you said that Allison kind of hates it right now.
Well, she's
everyone hates math.
Well, no, Allison,
when they
Allison
start.
Likes math. She sees it as a bunch of puzzles. Mm-hmm. It's just, she's like, this stuff is so easy. You know, it's so boring because it's easy.
It's a good place to be in. I mean, eventually that mm-hmm. is boring, but that means that she can eventually do the harder stuff and, you know, get it quicker. mm-hmm. get to the good stuff faster. But the trick with Common Core, at least the idea, is to not, at least Common Core math, is to not concentrate so much on rote memorization, right? It's to really get people to understand what the numbers mm-hmm. are, as opposed to just so memorize these formulas, like memorize the quadratic formula.
Right. Because that's so useful.
Yeah, it? Right, because we use that all the time.
And we even work in computer science. Yeah, so I know my tweets were a bit contradictory, but when I was writing to Marshall Thoughts, mm-hmm. you know, I basically said, you know, that I think it's good getting the kids familiar with the number line, basically, you know, just looking down to that and relationships between numbers. And then I got this, you know, favorite from Common Core News, you know, because, you know, I'm sure my sarcastic tweet to Greg was really their favorite tweet. So I gave them kind of a, I guess they don't teach sarcasm in Common Core.
I was a little, I mean, like, I tweeted something about John Lennon or someone mm-hmm. responded to something about John Lennon. I tweeted back to them and I got followed by like three or four different Beatles things. And I think that's just the way Twitter is. I'm not surprised by it at all. It's just, as soon as there is some sort of, oh, people are having a conversation on it, then the bots will start to favorite things, then they'll see if there's any trends. And I think that's just sort of a natural way to follow conversations, is to see if there's any trends that build up in a bit, and by favoriting things, and see if the favorites get to a certain critical mass, and then you can say, okay, something's actually happening, as opposed to, okay, isolated.
Yeah, we had this whole conversation about, fine, track, you know, but don't use a public bookmark thing like that, you know, one that sends a notification to my phone saying Common Core News favorited your tweet.
Yeah, now I think that there should be a way. I think you should be able to Twitter turn off people favoriting or people not on your timeline favoriting or something. Yeah. But
well, you can say people you don't follow, you can turn off all of those, but I want a little more fine grained, right? I want favorites from people I'm conversing with. Mm-hmm. I want a notification for that because that's an engaged conversation, right? And then I want notifications for someone talking to me who I'm not following is important, right. You know, noteworthy as well. You know, so those are the kinds of things.
But favorites from people who are not following
you. I was able to turn off the Greg Weiss and Joe Schmo and Fred are following Steve.
Oh, okay.
Those ones I was able to turn off. Those were the worst, right?
Those are annoying.
Five people you know or four are following someone you don't know. Yay. I better follow him so I'm cool.
I mean, it's come in handy once in the 20 or 30 times it's popped on my phone.
But it doesn't need to notify you.
No,
right?
It doesn't.
It's
really.
Such a low.
Yeah, I mean, I can just. It should be something more like, you know, just a tab you go to and see if mm-hmm. see those notifications instead of popping up on your phone. Now, I agree with that. But I do think that I would rather them, if they are favoriting your tweet or looking at you, I'd rather they notify you, hey, we're looking at you, than it being completely dark about it. I mean, isn't that what you want? Don't you want more transparency?
It's Twitter. Just assume everyone's looking at you. Right? I mean, it's not a private messaging platform.
That's true as well.
I did see a promoted or, you know, an advertisement tweet that was pretty funny. Who was it?
Oh, I got really mad at an advertising tweet, a promoted tweet.
Yeah. Most of them are ridiculous.
Well, the worst. Well, I mean, most of them are just dumb, and who cares? This one was for keeping the Redskins name as Redskins, and it was some Redskins fan organization. And I sent them like, "Fuck you! Change your racist name and get off my fucking Twitter feed." I was so pissed.
You can't block them.
I know you can't.
Even if they're truly offensive,
you can't
block them.
I marked it as spam and reported them for abuse. Because as far as I'm concerned, I'm sure it's just an automated process to be promoted, but that kind of thing, controversial subject, should not be able to be promoted like that.
No, I saw one, I forget what company it was, but it's like, follow us and you get free fist bumps at any location. I'm like, that's kind of fun and clever. I'll let that one slide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a little less obnoxious than, hey, this racist thing is everybody. Let's see what the actual tweet was. Because since I tweeted them, I probably have it in my...
I wish I would stop getting the dating ads, you know? Like, Twitter, you should know that I'm not really interested in, you know, finding some chick on Zoosk.
The tweet was Redskins facts, and I don't have... I think it got deleted. It doesn't have the tweet that came
maybe
back.
Maybe it did draw
so I think,
a racist... Cool. You Good. Made Twitter a better place.
At least I was a part of making Twitter a better place, and that's enough. Oh, I think it was this. You heard the hype, you know, the real facts behind the red, behind the team name, or help us preserve the Redskins' name and traditions. Show your support today. Ugh. Gross.
It's... I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but its mascot isn't even a historical Indian from the area. It's like an out west Indian, you know, with the feather, you know. Maybe not. I always pictured them as ones, you know, out in the prairies riding horses and buffaloes and stuff.
I think you have to deal with the fact that it's 2014 now. It's a different world. Change the goddamn name. I mean... It's not the 50s anymore. Stop acting like it's the 50s. Stop acting like it's okay to say Redskin. Stop acting like it's okay to say Jap. You know? I mean, come on. We should be past this by now. This is a settled subject. Why are we still going over it?
Because it's football, man. Don't mess with the NFL.
That is a problem, is that people have this reverence for sports in the same way that people have reverence for religion when it shouldn't have that kind of
pull. This week's Freakonomics, you know, talking about, you know, things that haven't changed. This week's Freakonomics is about regulation internet, particularly around Uber, Airbnb, Let's Eat or whatever it is, the one where you, what's it called? It's not called Let's Eat. It's like Airbnb, but for eating. Like, say you like to cook, right?
Explain yourself.
Say you like to cook, right? And
I like to cook, right?
Exactly. And you wouldn't mind cooking for people in your house and having them pay you for it. So you can, like, schedule, like, dinners and people will come eat at Greg's house. It's, what's it called? It's called,
It's called Free Salmonella.
Like, you don't get that in regular restaurants.
No, you don't, because there's health codes.
Health codes don't prevent all the food poisoning.
Not all the food poisoning, but right. They prevent a lot. There was a lot more food poisoning before there were health codes.
You're not eating at Creepy Joe's, you know.
How do you know?
Because there's reviews and stuff, and it's called Eat With, and the hosts are vetted. They're actually interviewed, and they have to cook for the Eat With guys before they're put on the thing. So it's kind of a controlled thing. But yeah, once you do it, like upcoming events.
At least there is some control. So there, it's not just a Wild West thing. There's some control. Yeah. Okay, well that's better.
And it's, you know, it's sharing community. It's peer to peer. I mean, there's reviews. You know, so you're not going to eat at someone who's brand, you know, you're gonna want to, you know, at least the first time you're out, you're gonna be wanting to get someone established, right? Like, let's see, here we got I wonder if there's anything in Pittsburgh.
I went down to DC last week to visit my parents, and I made an awesome meal. I'll tell you all about it later.
Okay. Oh wait, here. No, I don't think they're in Pittsburgh yet. Where's this one at? Swedish designer vegetarian dinner. Meal details. Meal composition. Appetizers. Main course. No alcohol. Menu is grilled crostini, mascarpone roasted figs, balsamic glaze, arugula, microgreens, stuffed acorn squash, cardamom, black spice, quinoa, pomegranate, currants, chèvre, with almond-laced crisps, lapsang chocolate ice cream, coconut-spiced whipped cream. $46.
I mean, it sounds good, but it also sounds like a bunch of appetizers. As opposed to
a Swedish designer vegetarian dinner.
I made a vegetarian dinner for the most part.
You're not a Swedish designer.
Well, the main dish that I made was a risotto. An asparagus and wild mushroom risotto. It's good.
Yeah, so no Pittsburgh at Eat With yet. But, you know, it's the idea is just like Uber and Airbnb, right? You have the kitchen. You like to cook. You wouldn't mind hosting a small group of people. Have a dinner party with strangers, right?
Well, I mean, that's what a restaurant is, right? It's just a more organized dinner party with strangers, essentially.
Generally not very social, right?
Yes, true.
It's more about turning to, you know, a restaurant. And they were talking about health codes and whatnot. And, I mean, there's... As long as the person's vetted and not psycho, right? I mean, he's a person who likes to cook. He's going to have to take pride in what he's serving, right? You're not going to... I don't think very many people are going to Eat With to find, you know, frozen pizza.
You know, as long as there is vetting, and as long as the vetting is proper, I kind of dig the idea because it gives people the, you know, the ability to do their passion and to sort of, you know, make a little bit of money for it.
Right.
Not without turning into... You know, so it's not just a pure suck on their resources.
Start podcast with.
I mean, we're already. I mean, you guys have been very, very nice to us.
Yeah. Have you ever used Uber or anything like that?
I've never used Uber.
Or Lyft.
Although, because I mean, I have my car, so you know, what's the point? But you know I remember that time when I had so much trouble with a taxi. I wish Uber and stuff was around then, four or five years ago, when I couldn't get a fucking taxi to come for 2 hours, even after ordering it the day before.
Right.
So, I mean, the world was crying out for this service, so I'm glad it's here, but no, I've never done it.
Here's a Michelin-inspired dinner without the stuffiness in Napa, California. It's a tasting menu. It is $115.
Mm-hmm. It's California, and it's probably a lot of good food.
Yep. Or some creepy guy. So anyway, I haven't got the whole way through a podcast yet, but the regulation, right? Because, you know, there's regulations against having a kitchen in your apartment, or a restaurant in your apartment. There's regulations against renting out a bedroom. There's... In New York City, at least, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's regulations against being a private jitney driver type thing, right? Like Uber or Lyft.
Right.
And, you know... That's
a problem here in Pittsburgh, because they're pulling over people who... They're pulling over cars that had the Lyft, like, mustache, right?
Mm-hmm. They were. Actually, they're both... Or Lyft is operating again under a temporary thing, and Uber's about to operate again, I think. But, you know, they're just talking about how, you know, the internet, like, looking at the regulations, are they valid, you know, with this whole sharing community type thing? I haven't put too much thought into it yet, but, I mean, it's almost the kind of thing where you're giving up some of that personal liability type stuff, right? Where, like, if you get food poisoning at the guy's house... You know, you're not going to... I mean, I've gotten food poisoning before. I've never considered suing somebody, you know? It's like...
Well, I mean...
People talk about food poisoning like it's the end of the world. It's just a couple of days of illness, you know?
It's a crappy couple of days.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you probably would feel a lot more comfortable suing a McDonald's than you would suing a person, suing somebody, you know, where you went to and just paid a, or a small restaurant, right? I mean, because a corporate conglomerate, huge thing like that, I mean...
Show me the money.
They A, have a whole lot of money, and B, if they can't keep that thing clean, then they shouldn't be around in the first place. So there's sort of an expectation. There's less of an expectation when they're small. I think these things, when they reach a certain critical mass, then they need more regulation. That's what needs to happen. It's okay to lax on the regulation while they're small, but when they get larger, you need to regulate them because, for a whole bunch of reasons, principally because of the uncertainty principle, and I mean that principally because nothing can be perfect, but also it's because people aren't angels.
Mm-hmm.
And so we arrive at Bitcoin.
So before we get to Bitcoin, you know, we're talking about, so people aren't angels, right? Well, places like Airbnb and Eatwith have a review system, right? Both for the hosts and for the guests. I'm curious if Lyft has the same kind of thing and Uber has the same kind of thing, right?
Yes, they do.
Do they?
They have like star ratings and stuff like
that. Okay, so you actually get to pick the person who's picking you up. Or I wonder if the, do the drivers get to see the reviews of the riders too?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
They can rate the riders as well, yeah.
That's cool. I think Uber and Lyft need to go a little bit further, right? Because they're talking about, you know, changing the way people get around, right? And really, they're just changing who's doing the driving, right?
Right.
It's still a purpose-driven car to shuttle people about where they need
to... But, I mean, you know, if it gets to be big, then really, I mean, you can do your reading in your car or whatever.
Right.
Because someone else is
driving. But I think where it... Next steps could be like, you know, oh, you're driving to Philadelphia today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this dude could use a ride to Philadelphia. You know, that kind
there
of
is
thing.
That. There is something like that, a ride sharing sort of thing where, you know, I forget what it's called, but there is something like that where I need to get from here to. I mean, there's like been things like on Craigslist, but I think there is a site for stuff like that.
You know, the magic will be in the app just knowing where you're going and being able to make connections without you having to like.
Right.
Post, I'm driving here, then I'm driving there, it'll be at this time, you know, that kind of thing, where if the app can make the connection for them. For
but
the
then game. You have to also set, you know, what star levels of the people that I'm getting, you know, and there's a whole lot of considerations, but then at that point, why don't you just take a bus?
Yeah, because Greyhound's so pleasant.
I don't know.
All right, Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
Motherfucking Bitcoin. Greg was trying to argue me with Bitcoin while I was at work and busy and unprepared. And I still didn't get prepared with your specific questions. But go ahead.
Well, I firmly believe, and I told you this, that this whole celebrity nude thing is because of Bitcoin. Not that there are celebrity nudes out there. That was sort of, I mean, it was kind of something you probably figured was out there. Because celebrities are people too, and
so I mean, what part are you talking about? The accounts were hacked because they
no.
Okay, so you need to clarify. Right?
Okay, the reason why these nudes became public, they were not just within a small cadre of collectors, which is where this whole thing, you know, took place. All this stuff was basically collected over years and years and years by a small cadre of collectors who just, you know, traded and had their own little network. And yeah, it's gross and all the other stuff, but it would have stayed there had not somebody said, I can make money off of this. And you think, well, hey, anybody can make money. But the thing about Bitcoin is it's untraceable and anonymous. So somebody figured I could be totally anonymous and untraceable and get these out there. And that's why they came out in the first place.
How much did they want for the...
I think they were looking for... I don't honestly know. I saw a number being tossed around. I don't know if it's true. I think they were looking for $25,000.
No, I mean per person. How much were they charging?
I have no idea.
Yeah, because not really worth that much.
I mean, no, but...
There were a lot of shitty pictures in there.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them were, I mean, they're gross, but they're interesting in a sociological perspective. The Jennifer Lawrence ones particularly, because there's always been kind of rumors that she'd slept around in Hollywood, but
okay,
that or that she did some casting couch things to get ahead, like Lindsay Lohan once implied it, I remember. But this seems to be pretty... significant evidence that she did. And it's pretty clear that these
cover
are
my face.
It's pretty clear that these are not pictures that were just on her phone. It's clear that this was a big hacking ring that was probably, you know, had lots of phones and lots of, you know, probably producers and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's where they, I mean, cause why would Jennifer Lawrence have that picture on her phone?
Right.
So there is,
some of them, like, you know, most of the actresses I didn't know, but there was the girl from Chuck, right?
Right.
But they were...
Those were selfies, right? Those were...
There was no face. I mean, maybe... I mean, it was very hard. Like, you're like, yeah, I guess that's her, but...
Yeah, I mean, it could be somebody else. There was Brie Larson was on there. She had the classiest ones, I thought.
Yeah. Well, no, there was the one girl in the hot tub right out on the beach. Those are pretty classy.
Wasn't that the one who also had the dick in her face?
Oh, maybe.
So, I mean, come on.
Well, that was a different series. It was on a shot on a different day.
I shouldn't... I mean, it is kind of gross that I even looked at them, but they were interesting. No,
it's in the news. You gotta look.
I didn't, you know, pleasure myself with them. It was more sort of like...
They weren't good enough to do that to you.
Even still, they were more sort of like a sociological thing. Like, really? And they're like, yeah, I guess so. And then you're doing like weird analysis on it. Like, is that really her? Like, well, these things sort of match up. Like, oh, that's gross. Why am I matching these things up? It's gross. But anyway, the whole reason why that came out is because there is a way for people to do these anonymous transactions and, you know, get away with it. And I'm wondering if people who are behind Bitcoin understand the sociological implications of this. If it's already starting to be that way, imagine if Bitcoin was taken actually seriously by a large percentage of people. Imagine what you could do with embezzling money or laundering money. It's like that. Easy. Super easy.
Just like cash.
No, not much just like cash. Cash has serial numbers. Cash can be tracked. This is completely anonymous. Where'd that money go? I don't know. It went into Bitcoin. Who got it? I don't know. How'd you get all this money? Someone donated it to me. Who? I don't know.
Okay. Why is this such a bad thing, though?
Embezzlement? Money laundering?
Okay.
Why are these such a bad thing? Are you seriously asking that question?
No, I'm saying why is anonymous payments and whatnot. Bad things can happen, but there's good things that can happen, too. Right? I mean... You can send money to the EFF and the government won't know about it, you know.
Yes, but you're taking the good things and not considering the bad things that can happen. I mean, think about the idea, like, if somebody kidnaps something or makes a terroristic threat or something like that. Let's say somebody kidnaps somebody and then they get, you know, for cash. We can track that money. We put trackers on it. We can, you know, get some of the bills that are tracked or whatever. Now we can't. No, I want it in Bitcoin. We can't even track who did it. We have no idea.
Money is not the only way to track someone down for that stuff. Someone's going to be releasing a person. You can work back from that.
Maybe it's... What if it's a...
you're downloading a zip file.
What about blackmail? Blackmail becomes a hell of a lot easier, doesn't it? Easier than it already was.
Now, I'm with the don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's not, you know, there's good things that cryptocurrency.
There's
have.
A reason why we have these kind of controls on money. There's a reason why we have a centralized government control of money. So we don't get a deflationary currency. So we don't have these problems that crop up in Bitcoin. So we don't have the idea that a whole bunch of the Bitcoin miners can collude, which they could certainly do. Because there's no regulation against that. And if they did, they would just basically corner the market. Is there incentive for them not to collude? Yes. If there is more incentive for them to collude in order to corner the market, if it gets very valuable, then they'll do that. And there's no regulation on it. It's something that, as far as I'm concerned, I understand the technology is neat. And I understand that there's cool things about it. There are also problems with it that are definitely recognized by the Bitcoin community. They're trying to be fixed. But if they can't even figure out all the technical problems with it, and they haven't even considered the sociological implications of it, that's certainly telling you something about the possibilities that are there.
Well, the world wants cryptocurrencies.
That's no, obvious. The world doesn't want cryptocurrencies. The world really does not want cryptocurrencies. The price of Bitcoin has dropped considerably for years now. It was at like $1,000 for Bitcoin now. Now it's at $400. The amount of people who are actually investing in Bitcoin has dropped considerably. There are more places that are actually taking Bitcoin. It's true. But the amount of people who actually can have Bitcoins has dropped considerably. The amount of people who are investing in Bitcoins has dropped considerably. or any of the altcoins. The world is not interested in cryptocurrencies.
I didn't mean the whole world.
Well, yes, you did.
No, I didn't. There's markets for cryptocurrencies or people wouldn't use it.
There's markets for celebrity nude pics.
Yeah. If you don't want to be in that picture, don't take nude pics
saying,
of yourself.
You know, we were talking about Lyft and Uber and other things. There's markets for a lot of things. I agree. There is markets for a speculative commodity that looks and acts like a currency, sure. But there isn't a pressing need for it, and B, there really is not very good justification for it, and C, we don't really know the sociological impact it would have. And D, they appear to be deleterious. Those are all factors, I would say, against Bitcoin.
Okay.
Okay. What's next?
I don't know.
Biggest dinosaur. Da-da. Oh, feminism. That's interesting. You want to go another rant? I'm a feminist, by the way.
Okay.
Okay. So there are some friends of mine who have been doing some things on the internet. They've been putting some videos out on the internet, or at least they were. And I was like almost angry with them because they were so bad. They have this series called Living with a Luchador, and it was towards a Mexican wrestler with a mask on. And I think that there's actually a premise there, right? It's a Balky situation. It's a Perfect Strangers type situation, but none of their stories had any structure. There was nothing. It was just random assortments of scenes. And so I first of all told them like several times, like, this is insulting. I'm mad at you for even putting this on the internet. Blah, blah, blah. Then to explain what I meant is, after I had already told one of the guys who does it, you know, all the story structure stuff, I wrote a whole big thing about it for a different project. I wrote a really stupid, simple script for them to look at. Just, you know, a really first draft script. I said, this is a shitty script, but it has story structure once you look at it. So they took that and then they said, okay, we're going to take that. And apparently, I don't think Chris, the guy, really actually even read it. Or he read it. He distilled some things from it and then told somebody else who they wrote with to write a script based on it. So, and then they asked me what I thought of it. And I took a look at it and I was like, okay, we need to talk. So we brought everybody together. This was on Tuesday, and I went through the script and why it was bad, and I explained to them, look, it's a first draft, it's going to be bad, that's fine, but you're missing point six and point eight on a story wheel. You're not hitting your the parts that they were missing were missing the meeting with the goddess. It just wasn't there. It was like completely skipped over, and they're missing the crossing the return threshold. It was just gone. Without those bits, the other bits were kind of there, sort of. I could sort of place them, but without those bits, it just didn't make any sense what happened. There was no logical connection from the steps. So the story just kind of, it started out, and then it sort of stopped, and then it sort of jumped in different places. It was like, what the fuck is going on? Why is this happening? Why is this person doing this? There's no motivation to do it at all. So we got together. I explained the story to them for like an hour. I broke it apart. Then I made a very simple story. Well, first we did a consideration of the characters. I asked them to write down all their characters and what they were. And we took them apart. We said, okay, who are these characters? And they had like seven or eight characters. And said, look, let's compress this. We don't need to have these ancillary characters. We can throw in this guy who's kind of a Milhouse. We can throw him in later. We can throw in this guy who's kind of a Apu. We can throw him in later. We can put them in, you know, episode five or six. We don't need to throw everybody that you want into one episode. Let's boil it down to what this show's about. these two guys and this luchador, right? And then who are these guys? And so we figured, okay, the luchador is kind of the luchador and the and John are the two guys who are going to kind of have a Stewie Brian relationship. They're going to be antagonists to each other, but they're also going to sort of get along and do things with each other. But the first thing they're going to do is sort of hate each other and butt each other's heads. And then there's this other guy, Chris, who is Chris is going to be acting as the sort of moral compass, the Mike Seaver, the dad.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be the guy who teaches the lessons. Once we had that figured out, I made a very simple story for their first episode, which is the initial them coming over, the initial confrontation with John, and then how that confrontation is resolved as John tries to kick him out, tries to get Chris to not like him, fails completely, and gets incensed by it, but then is turned around. Really very simple story structure, but once we had that backbone, we then started to riff on it, and it was really an hour and a half of great ideas coming out. I mean, once you have that there, mm-hmm. you say, okay, so what goes on in this step? And we had lots of stuff. I mean, the jokes that they had in their script were terrible, but the jokes that we came out with, while I don't know if they're going to make it, you know, mm-hmm. they had the whole room laughing. And, you know, I said, you know, if anything doesn't make you laugh out loud, throw it out. Don't put a laugh line in there that you don't think is funny. That you think, oh, it's funny to other people, but not to me. Because no one's right. going to care about that. So we came up with some actually really funny stuff once we had structure. And everyone realized that. Once you have structure, it was really easy to just start pulling people and pulling things out.
Okay. Cool.
So, yeah, I mean, and it became a really collaborative experience once that happened. So that story structure is so important and so vital. And I can't recommend reading the Dan Harmon stuff enough. The Dan Harmon story tutorial is enough. If you want to do any sort of writing,
where can people find Living with a Luchador?
Don't.
Okay.
Not yet. This is. you can look for it on YouTube. If you desperately want to just hurt yourself, it's not worth it. If this stuff ever comes out, and I don't know that it will, it'll be a lot better. But right now, I'm just sort of teaching them writing. You found it?
I did find it.
Oh, God.
So my brother and I came across this bar on our last night of vacation in Mexico. We heard people yelling, so we decided to go in.
Then we saw him, El Petrico, wrestling in a bar. He was in a big hurry after his match because he apparently owed people a lot of money.
So he hopped in the car. We came over the border. He got naturalized.
Is it all colored pencil?
And now we're living with a luchador.
No, okay. Yeah.
I'm sexy and I know it.
Oh, God.
What? No, it's bueno.
Huh. Oh, no, you're shaving.
So why'd you change your shirt?
Well, this is my shaving shirt.
Oh, and why'd you change your mask?
It's my shaving mask.
Well, anyway, come on, let's go. We gotta do this.
Shaving mask, that's a decent joke. The delivery was horrible.
Dude, occupado, man!
That's fine. Come on, let's
come
go.
On!
Come on, El Petrico, you wanna sit up here? Here's just the scissors for your beard, okay? We're going to trim your beard. It's pretty long. We're probably going to trim it down to about here, okay? Here's a shaving cream. Here's a razor. They work together.
Okay. I don't know why you're watching this. I really don't. This is.
I got to see where they started so I can appreciate them.
You rub it in to your beard.
No, you don't want to. This is the shit that they didn't even write. They like... And there's no story. There's nothing. It's just a series of disconnected scenes.
Sitting on the toilet. I got walked in on.
Right.
Shocking. All right. Hopefully you're... Hopefully something better comes out. It'd be cool if you...
I think that there
you
were...
You get an executive producer credit?
Yes. I will insist on that. Yeah. But I think there were some legitimately good ideas that came out we had this whole idea for a montage sequence, and then there was a kicker to the montage sequence that you know, there was a rule of threes joke, and there's lots of really good stuff that we came up with that, you know, who knows if it'll ever actually be used or if it'll ever actually be produced. But it was a funny, like, 3 or 4 minute sketch or, you know, show. It was mm-hmm. really sort of, you know, more of a show because it ended where you started type thing, and gave room for more episodes and stuff like that. And also it had a stinger with a season-long arc or something. So there was actually other mm-hmm. stuff going on. But it was... There were lots of... Once you had the structure, it was so... The ideas came flowing. It was really, really cool to be, you know, sort of... I think everyone in the room sort of felt it. It was like... All of a sudden, everyone just sort of, you know, tossing out ideas and like, okay, this, yeah, well, but what if we did this? What if we did this? And it just morphs into really cool things. Highly recommend that if you ever want to do something creative like that, form a team, get a structure going, and then just start riffing. It's great.
Cool. I dig it. It's weird hearing myself in the other ear.
I know.
It's really weird.
All right, so that's enough for now?
Yeah, I think so.
How do I pause? How do I just stop? Okay. Well, we'll see you in the main show.